Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Horrible Podcast. I'm Brian.
I'm Tyler.
I'm Drew.
I'm Luna.
And this is episode 100 plus 50. 100 plus 2 stone, or something. 100 and...
16 stone? Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah. This is 16, episode 16 stone.
I mean, whatever happened to Bush? They had that one album, and that was it.
Well, then they had Razorblade Suitcase, and that was the problem.
No?
I like that album.
Oh, it's not that good.
That album went triple. That album went triple platinum. I know that it sold at least 3 million. Yeah, I know it sold at least 3 million copies.
It's so not nearly as good. 16 Stone is really great. For that time period, it's fantastic.
Razorblade Suitcase is a more interesting album, though.
What single did Razorblade Suitcase have? Was that
Swallowed.
One?
Swallowed, yeah. I tried to listen to it recently. I was trying to give it another chance, and I had to cut it off. I was like, I'm uninterested in this.
I think it's
and then
weird.
They had Deconstructed after that, right? Mm,
I think so.
Yeah. Is that the one with The Chemicals Between Us?
It's the one that had the Mal later. Cover that was on. Yeah, that's from like The Speed of All Things.
Gotcha.
Or Speed That Kills or something is another album that comes out to that. No, Deconstructed had the Mouth cover that's in American Werewolf in Paris.
With the
I recall.
It had a. Was that the one with the remix? There was one song that was on Razorblade Suitcase that was remixed for American Werewolf in Paris.
That's Mouth, yeah.
Mouth, yeah. Mm, makes
me
mad.
The Deconstructed version is better.
Yeah. The yeah. That version is really good. I remember that making, for me, that made the movie American Werewolf in Paris tolerable. Also, I thought the guy in it looked kind of like Tom Hanks.
Tom Everett Scott?
Yeah, I think he looks like Tom Hanks. Yeah, I like him. Whatever happened to him?
Tom in That Thing You Do, basically?
Yeah, he basically plays a young Tom Hanks.
He plays adults and things now. I can't remember what I saw him in one time, but I always see him and I always recognize him. That was not a good movie either, though.
That Thing You Do?
Wait.
American Werewolf in Paris.
Yeah, American Werewolf in Paris was not good. Except the scene where Julie Delpy... She's having sex with Tom Everett Scott, and then she she has the wolf transition while she's on top of him.
Yeah,
that was the most memorable sequence.
The most erotic thing. As a young guy,
I don't think our generation makes for good adults on TV.
Is that what we're doing on American Werewolf in Paris?
Yep.
Because I did not watch it again. I had to go with my memories of what
95.
Whenever that came out, that's all.
95 or 96.
I decided instead of watching the movie we're supposed to watch and American Werewolf in Paris, I just watched the Tom Everett Scott, Zach Morris film.
Dead Man on Campus.
Yes,
that was the first. Yes. I think that was the first movie produced by MTV Studios.
Joe's Apartment.
Maybe Joe's Apartment. I think it was the first one with a theatrical release because I don't know that Joe's Apartment got a theatrical release. Did it? Weird.
Yeah, everything got theatrical releases back then.
Who played the dead man on campus? Who was that?
They were trying to kill
their roommate because they thought it would get amazed. But who
and
was
that big dumb guys and other things shows up? That's the one that I was like, that one's not beer. And they're like, oh, we got beers, let's drink them.
That joke,
one's not beer.
I think that movie might have been the origin of that joke, which was really popular in the 90s. Like it captured that joke captured the 90s zeitgeist for the lack of taste for beer.
Better than the rest of the movie did, yeah.
I also realize now that if I'm going to make a joke about a 90s band, that I better just stop because Drew's going to school me on that shit.
What do you mean?
Like I was like, oh, Bush only had one album, and then we've had
Razorblade Suitcase. I will still defend that as a tolerable album.
I think my disappointment is why I still like it so little, is I wanted it to be so good, and when I got it, it wasn't, and then I tried it again. I did. Lachlan Monroe plays Cliff, the dumb guy.
Okay.
You know him if you saw him.
Yeah, yeah. He's the... Oh, fuck. Was he the... Ah, oh, damn it. No, I was thinking that he was the guy from the movie version of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but that's not it. The guy...
No.
Anyway.
It's something like that, though. He's in...
All right. Anyway, so 150. People who have looked at the heading on this episode know what we're doing, and they want us to get into it. So I feel like... Sometimes you give the people what they want, and what we should give the people is Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, we've Silence discussed it on this podcast many a time.
Yeah.
I referenced
obliquely.
It. I mean, and Drew and I were talking the other night, like, he got me with, besides The Exorcist, maybe the only, they won't call it horror, but the only horror film to win an Academy Award.
Well, they just didn't win. We're talking about nominations. And that would still be Jaws and Sixth Sense, too. But the only one that wins, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and maybe, oh, man, one of the best movies. Like, okay, so we can all heap praise on this movie, right? Like, this is a movie we can just heap huge amounts of praise on. Jonathan Demme, I mean, he made some good movies before Silence of the Lambs, but Silence of the Lambs is definitely his crowning achievement.
It's his best before and after, yeah. He's got some
also,
good movies.
I mean, Married to the Mob. All right, is that him or is that Bullets Over Broadway? Which one is Jonathan
Bullets
Demme?
Over Broadway is Woody Allen.
Woody Allen,
Married to the Mob.
Married to the Mob.
Something Wild.
Yeah, Something Wild is literally the name of the movie. It's not that we're forgetting. It's literally the name of the movie.
The also a tie-in for The Exorcist and Silence of the Lambs is Jonathan Demme. The mother saying, Demme, why you do this to me?
Exactly. I can't think of a way to yes and that, but I can only agree with it.
He gave a terrible speech to the Oscars. That's one thing I'll always remember from
What did he say? I don't remember.
It's just really long and rambling, and he the entire time. It's like he's like, and I'd like to thank, and it's so long, and it just keeps going. It's the most painful speech I've ever sat through live.
The Silence of the Lambs. Are the lambs crying behind you, Drew?
One lamb.
A lamb.
A beautiful little lamb. Yeah. Silence of the Lambs is one of the movies that's won that won the top five awards, right? Best actor, best actress.
Yes.
Because it is Titanic. And what other movie? Titanic didn't win the top five?
Well, no, because best actor couldn't have got, Leo didn't get on.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Picture, director, actor, actress, and screenplay.
What other movies have gotten that?
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and It Happened One Night.
Okay. All right, that's fair. I don't know why I thought Titanic did that.
Titanic?
No.
What was that?
It's a Frank Capra, but It Happened One Night. It's a Frank Capra comedy.
Yeah, like a really old movie.
Clark Gable and Claudette Colbert.
Not the movie where Nick, oh, fuck, what's his name?
Cage?
Nick Cage wins the lottery. It's not that movie.
I liked that movie
that
a lot.
Was that the one with Rosie Perez?
It Could Happen to You.
Yeah, it could happen to you. Yeah. There we go, man.
And Bridget Fonda.
Yeah, Bridget Fonda, not Rosie Perez.
I was very fond of Bridget Fonda.
I was too. Point of No Return, boom. I like
that
movie.
That's a really great remake.
All right, so Silence of the Lambs is definitely a movie we can heap praise on. Like, it's easy for
that's
us to just...
That's what I'm talking about, like, Point of No Return.
Yeah, I mean, I think...
Also, I'm not going to agree with you. I don't like the movie.
You're lying.
No, I'm going to do it. Okay. I'm going to do devil's advocate the whole time. I'm going to shit on everything that you say nice about it.
Well,
not really give it reason. I'm just gonna be like, well, I don't like it.
Well, I think I actually did look up two negative reviews that were time appropriate. So not like people going back and reviewing it now. And I was surprised to find that one of the negative reviews at the time was Gene Siskel. Another person for a Chicago newspaper who was not Roger Ebert also disliked it and gave kind of an interesting... reason. Like, what's weird is that I can't remember the person's name, but one of the reviews said that the movie was entirely too brutal, that the movie was too grisly and all of these other things, and it fed into institutional sexism and all these other things. So this person had very, very 90s reasons, or I guess very now reasons for not liking it. But Gene Siskel said, he ostensibly said that it didn't go far enough, and that Clarice Starling wasn't a completely... lacking character because she was not as interesting as the monster she chased. And I think that's a fair
That's what but wasn't that what she was supposed to be? Like, this, they sent her in as a kind of wet behind the
ears
mole. Because she was not, he couldn't get in, he wouldn't fall for her bullshit like a regular agent.
But it doesn't defend his statement. Is still a fair one in that being the reason, you still need to make her interesting beyond that. I mean, and I disagree. I think she does become interesting beyond that, but I think that's also why Manhunter and Red Dragon, the book, not movie, are ultimately more well thought of in certain circles, because Will Graham is a much more fascinating character than Clarice Starling is. Now, granted, you get a lot more Hannibal Lecter in Silence, although it's still not a lot, but and he's ultimately the most fascinating character.
Wasn't that one of the Anthony Hopkins won Best Actor, like one of the least amount of screen times ever given to somebody winning
something
Best
like
Actor?
12 minutes, yeah.
Well, for Best Actor, yes. That's the thing, because it was, that's always the question, was why he was Best Actor, not Best Supporting as well.
It's all one of the sort of overlapping ideas here in the Venn diagram of their reviews is also is Anthony Hopkins. And both reviews kind of paint it as though, like, it's weird because this was, I guess, before the sort of outlaw, evil villain as hero idea was widespread, because a lot of, like, both reviews say, oh, Hannibal Lecter, why are we uplifting this asshole? Like, why are we uplifting this monster?
I think this movie starts a lot of stuff, I would say, yeah.
Yeah, like, I think that's an interesting idea that we take for granted now. I mean, especially, I mean, to work him in here, especially post-Quentin Tarantino, the idea of a really unlikable, well, I guess, sorry, I mean, Anthony Hopkins is super likable. That's not the problem. The problem is that he's a psychopath, and he's ostensibly right. I think it's either Gene Siskel or the other person, I can't remember, says that the movie loses its moral center when Hannibal Lecter becomes the focus, kind of the focus of this. I think that's an interesting criticism of the movie. Like, I don't agree with it, but I think it's interesting to take a movie that I think is almost flawless. Like, there is not a wasted centimeter of film in Silence of the Lambs. Like, I can't think of an unnecessary scene in that movie. I can't think of an unnecessary line. I mean, it's just perfect in a lot of ways, man.
Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, of course, when I first watched the film, I mean, this is 1991. I am, yeah. I'm only 37 at this point, so I don't have the sharpened film watching skills that I do now at 72. But don't do the math. Trust me. No, I was in my sophomore year of high school, I believe, when this came out. So we watched it just for the shock factor.
I was 11.
We watched it for the shock factor because we heard, oh my God, yeah. Anthony, Hannibal Lecter, and just the sheer amount of fucking pop culture references that came from just from the line Chianti and fava beans and the, which I don't even like anymore because of how overused it is.
What, Chianti and fava beans?
Yeah, anytime someone says Chianti, it's like, every time I'm at a wine tasting, like, you want to try the Chianti. Yeah.
It's the weird way that he says it, too. A nice Chianti and fava. And in the book, it's not Chianti, but they changed it because Demi or the writer thought that people would not.
Tally.
Yeah, people would not get that it was a wine. So they changed it.
So they had Cab Sauv. What did they change it to?
They changed it from something to Chianti, so that it would be more accessible to most people.
Cabernet Sauvignon.
Well, yeah, and so, like, I think, man, I like the book Silence of the Lambs. I mean, I think Thomas Harris is a fantastic writer, but this is one of those rare cases where the movie far exceeds the book. Like, I think the book reads like a script of the movie, because the movie, like, what's weird about Silence of the Lambs is that it's able to take a full-length novel and work almost every plot and subplot element into it without it feeling overlong. Like, I think that's an amazing feat of this movie, where most movies have to, like, cut so much. I mean, and it helps that it's kind of a slender book, but it's amazing how much they're able to work into this film.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot that gets cut that was necessary to it. Yeah, yeah. It's so streamlined and it clocks in right at 2 hours. It's just so it's
118 minutes. Did you read any of his other books, Lona? Did you read Sounds of the Land?
Nice about it.
Yeah, I read it a long time after. Again, I was in like fifth grade.
Lona, what are your impressions of Silence of the Lambs?
Mine.
Yeah, you're on the podcast.
Oh, I forget sometimes. No, I mean, I was thinking about it this week. It's very hard to imagine my life without that film in it.
Yeah.
Because I remember watching it for the first time, of course, and it being, just mind-boggling from, like, I think I was, like, in eighth grade or something, and which was probably inappropriate. Thanks, parents. But, and I just remember it sticking with me. And then it became one of those things where when it started playing on television as the edited, like, watered down version on Sunday mornings, and it became just like, oh, this is on. So, I mean, I've probably watched it like 50 times.
How many of us actually watched it again this week?
I plan on doing it last night, but I was entirely too sick. However, I did watch it 2 or 3 months ago. And I think, like, it's a movie that I watch about every year, like, coincidentally. Like, it's a movie that will come on a movie channel. I'm like, oh, fuck, I got to sit down and watch Silence of the Lambs. It's a movie that, with every rewatch, I find something new that interests me about it. Beyond, like, not like, I love The Big Lebowski, but I just kind of quote the lines as the movie's happening. Like, I'm so less interested in, like, what they're doing in that film than I am in Silence of the Lambs, where I'm like, oh, man, I see what's going on here, and, like, the relationships between these characters. Like, it's so, like, it's such a complex text. Like, the more you watch it, like, the more you sort of uncover about it.
There was a, I blanked out. I started and I stopped.
Go ahead, Drew.
Well, I was just going to say, I think the an interesting thing that developed post post its success, though, is the Manhunter counter revolution sort of that popped up in the, you know, defense of Michael Mann's Manhunter being the better film and all of those things. That was a very popular counter critical
sentiment.
Movement, I guess, coming afterwards. Which, I mean, granted, I mean, I love Manhunter. I really do. There's so many things great about that. I love to think of what Brian Cox's Hannibal Lecter in Silence of the Lambs would have been like.
Right.
Whoa. I just love to think of that idea. But at the same time, Silence is a superior film.
Oh,
yeah, totally.
Did Anthony Hopkins... I'm sorry.
Yes.
It's not Anthony Hopkins, is it?
Who?
Yes, Anthony. For some reason, I was thinking that's... No, that's the guy from Psycho. I'm sorry.
Anthony Perkins is who that's
yes.
Psycho.
So Anthony Hopkins, did he wear contacts in this film? Does he have contacts in this movie?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Because I thought, like, the most compelling thing for me in watching him portray Hannibal Lecter is how blank he makes his eyes. Like, there's just... Yeah. I remember hearing a interview with him about the movie and they were talking about that and how it went from... He went from Anthony Hopkins, very nice gentleman, to all of a sudden when they are like, you know, when he switches on, it was just like a look just came over his face and his eyes just went blank. And it was like a noticeable change in who he'd become. And I mean, I know that's great actors do that, but it was just a...
It's the creepy blue eye phenomenon.
He does that as Nixon as well. Turns it off and on.
Yeah, he does do it as Nixon. But I
think
this may have been the first, besides, what was it, Magic? But the first real film that I ever saw Anthony Hopkins in.
Oh, yeah. I had no clue who this guy was when this movie came out. Like, even if I'd seen Magic on TV, I didn't know that that was the same person.
And I think that works to the benefit of this movie. Like, this movie does a lot of what horror film, like, general horror films do. Like, someone who is a veteran actor but who hasn't had his break. Like, the young female starlet. It has all of that element in it. But I think, like, what's weird about Anthony Hopkins is, like, post this movie, he became known, like, he became this, like, acting juggernaut. But, I mean, he had won a Razzie for worst actor only, I mean, a few years before this. Like, it's a weird transition that happens.
I will say that after watching this, like, then I remembered, like, after watching it, of course, I remembered he was in The Elephant Man and stuff like that. I was like,
right.
Oh, shit, right. This guy has been around a long time. He was 54 when he played Hannibal Lecter.
What? Wow.
He was the same age I was when I saw the movie. Yeah, he was 54 when he played Hannibal Lecter. So, as many parts, I mean, and he, you know, Elephant Man is Lynch, David Lynch, and so he worked with some very well known directors. But I mean, this definitely is the one that was finally like, all right, well, he's
Attenborough directed Magic.
Oh,
that's interesting. Yeah, I mean,
to John Hammond.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The director of Gandhi.
I'm pretty sure he's just John Hammond.
Anyway,
looking to
you're looking it up? Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the effects, and ultimately, sort of one of the biggest problems with the movie is that people wanted more of it. There were sequels to the books, and there was no way that a film adaptation of one of Thomas Harris's books could reach the heights that Silence of the Lambs did. Like, I mean, what are your thoughts overall on Hannibal as a movie?
I just don't remember it positively that much. I remember reading the book and I remember going to see the movie and being excited about both and liking them, but I just don't have positive memories of them.
Yeah. I really liked the movie the first time I saw it.
Hannibal?
Yeah. I really liked it as a theater-going experience. And then I read the book, and I was like, oh, man, this book. Like, I thought the book was really good. Like, a lot of people sort of take pot shots at it, but I really enjoyed the book. Like, it was a great sort of spring break read where you just sort of like lie around and read that book from cover to cover.
I think I read it over a summer break as well.
Yeah.
I read it before the movie. I know I read it as soon as it came out. But I remember the book being thinking about the book is it's just Thomas Harris being like, all right, you motherfuckers want them to be together. I'm going to fucking give it to you. And then you read it and it's like horrible. And you're like, that's not what should have happened at all. Like when they end up together, it's just like, not what I think I wanted.
What's weird for me is in thinking of it in those terms, like I don't think of it as Thomas Harris bending to the whims of the masses.
No, I think it's him saying, fuck you, this is what you wanted. Well, I'm going to make it terrible is what I think that sequence does at the end.
Huh. Well, I see it more as him taking, like making a very high concept decision about the end of the book. Like, I think it's a really interesting, like in a way, he wrote a satire of Silence of the Lambs. Like he wrote this thing that is like, it takes celebrity and, cause like at the end of the book, I think Barney actually sees them get out of a limo or something. And it's very weird. Like I can't remember how it ends, but it's something where he sees them as like, oh man, that's weird. And it almost seems to be like a satire of the celebrity culture that has arisen around Clarice Starling and Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah. I think the funny thing is while Silence is definitely the best of the movies, I think Manhunter is the best of his books. It's just interesting that it's always going to be the second tier because of Silence. I think Silence of Lambs is a great book too, but I think Manhunter, it just has so many, like I said, I think his central protagonist is better.
Yeah, I think Red Dragon by like hands down, I think is a better book. Like,
yeah, I think it's Bad Guys. I mean, Buffalo Bill's interesting, but The Tooth Fairy is Francis Dolarhyde's much more interesting and much more terrifying.
And Freddie, cool. What's his name? The
Freddie Lounds.
Freddie Lounds is such an interesting, and I think in the film, like in the Brett Ratner version, like whatever you want to, I think you can sort of pillory that movie for a lot of things, but I think the cast in that movie is really solid, especially when you have, what's his name? Who plays Freddie Lounds? He's dead.
Philip Seymour Hoffman,
I think is Freddie Lounds is a really interesting choice in the cast. Like I only started to dislike that movie sort of like, after I got out of the film and the critical reaction to it. Like while I was in the film, I was like, you know what? I'm in this world. I like it.
It's too exacting of an attempt to recreate. It's almost like an attempt to shot for shot recreate Silence of the Lambs, but in the sense of atmosphere for atmosphere, kind of make Red Dragon Silence of the Lambs.
I can dig that.
Which I think is where it ends up paling and where a lot of people get annoyed with it because it doesn't have anything that sets it apart on its own. Which is still, of course, what Manhunter has. At least it has ridiculously wicked Michael Mann style that makes it like nothing else, like not many other films that you would have seen at that time, especially.
But now, I cannot remember Red Dragon as much as I remember Hannibal and Silence of the Lambs, but I remember when I first saw Hannibal, and I didn't see it in the theater. I saw it after it came out on VHS or whatever. That
I think it was DVDs by this point.
DVDs. No, I saw it out the VHS because like I'm a purist. This is awful.
This is the only way to see the art form.
Yeah,
I want to rewind this fucker when I'm done.
Just how fucking creepy Gary Oldman was in that movie.
Right. Yeah.
Mason Verger is a horrific character in the series. He is in the TV show as well when they bring him into it. He's pretty grotesque.
Is he all chewed up and shit?
Yeah. He ends up being. He doesn't start.
I'm sure he doesn't start that way. Yeah.
So they.
Show's really a really cool retconning kind of the whole series. It's very interesting.
I got through halfway through season one, and I just have not been able to get back to watch it. Not because I didn't like it. I just did not get a chance to.
So many TV shows, Brian.
So many. And unfortunately, unlike a movie, TV shows take a lot of fucking time.
I mean, 12 hours, bro. 12 hours.
That's one I would highly recommend.
I've watched a few episodes, and I dig it. Like, I have the first season. I dig it. Like, I want to get into it. But I think it's going to be like a summer watch where I can just, like, put it on and binge it.
Yeah, by the last season, you get to their retelling of Red Dragon is pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't think Hannibal's a terrible movie. I mean, it has all the elements needs. I think I think recasting Clarice Starling is really weird. I mean, they had to, you know what I mean? Like, because of...
She wasn't coming back.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you had to do that. I mean, bringing Anthony Hopkins back was a must. But other than that, I mean, I think it's a serviceable movie. I don't think it's a great movie. The thing that Red Dragon has, the Brett Ratner version, that really irritates me is Edward Norton, like, speaking his internal monologue aloud. Like, that's always such an awkward on-film experience because, like, he's ostensibly saying what a character is thinking in the novel, and it makes it just so cringeworthy. Like, when at the beginning where he finds the person who puts the mirrors in the eyes, and he's like, you wanted to see yourself in them, you bastard. Like, it's that kind of dialogue where I'm like, oh, man, that's tough to watch. Like, I can't do that very often.
It's Law and Order.
That's Manhunter. That's what they do in all that. They did that in Manhunter as well because it's how he break into his what he's seeing.
It's such an awkward, almost like in a way, it is very stage. Like, it's a very stage way of doing it. But
well, it's all the cop show stuff. Every cop show ends that way where you find the bad guy and they, oh, you did this and I put these pieces together and I'm telling you the story just in case you, the viewer at home, couldn't figure it out on your own.
the bottom levels of viewership. We're going to make sure you get it.
I'm in that bottom level. Like, when I watch cop shows, they kind of have to explain it. And then I'm like, oh, I get it.
For the Trump supporters now, what has happened?
I'm not a Trump supporter, but I need things explained to me.
You know, I've switched sides. I'm kind of on his in his
ring. Shut up.
He tells it like it is.
I mean, yeah, I just want to make America great again. I can't really
like
give,
Hannibal Lecter. He tells
I really,
it how it
I
is.
Really can't give you a time period that I thought was great, but I just want to make it that way again. But
pretty sure Hannibal Lecter doesn't tell it like it is. He lies pretty much to everyone.
Yeah. Exactly, just like Donald Trump.
Donald
Trump really wants
there.
To eat us.
I tell you, speaking of...
that would be great. Donald Trump gets elected president. He just turns on the first day to Ben Carson, his vice president, and just eats him. Just sticks his hand into his chest and pulls out his heart.
He's Mullah Ram now. I like it.
I don't understand how he got elected. I mean, I'm the best, and I got this black dude as the vice president.
I got ideas. They're great ideas.
Ben, wake up. I love the, have you seen the gif of Ted Cruz as the, Zodiac Killer stuff, all the Ted Cruz as the Zodiac Killer stuff. It's pretty great. Like, the people
wouldn't he have had to have been in America at that point? I don't think he was there yet.
He wasn't even alive.
He's still in Canada, I think, at that point.
No, I think he wasn't even born yet. Was like 2 years old or something ridiculous, which makes it even better because a 2 year old did all that. That is fucked up.
Amazing.
A 2 year old Canadian. I mean, American. He's American.
I think one of the most interesting aspects of Silence of the Lambs is how sort of it manages to handle these transgressive topics and still feel fairly progressive in its politics. Like, one of the big elements of detection in the film and the movie in the book is that Buffalo Bill is ostensibly is transgender, wants to get the reassignment surgery, but can't because he's violent. And like, the movie makes a very specific point when it says, like, not every person who is transgender is like this. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think that's a really interesting, like, that how timeless that is. Like, oh man, this movie is actually really progressive, even though the killer is a thing that's, go ahead.
And I think that's a good point that I think it would be highly criticized for nowadays if it came out for having a transgender killer.
Right.
If it were to come out right now, it would get hammered by the organizations that hammer people for that.
Yeah.
By sitting there saying, "Oh, why do they have to be transgender?" I think that's a fascinating point. I don't think it would be hailed as progressive at all. I think it would be slammed.
Caitlyn Jenner would definitely be against this.
Like, I think it's weird because it's like it was progressive for then, and I think like in a lot of ways it is actually progressive now. But if it, you're right. Like, if it were released today, it would be like, oh man, this movie is so terrible.
I can't believe they did that. How did they make that?
But I think, like, you know, the standard bearers for that movement, like, it makes sense for them. But I think most people would understand, like, oh, this is just meant to be an aberration. Like, as long as, like, the movie doesn't, I mean, it does kind of dawdle around the idea that, like, oh man, this person is really weird for having these. Like, it's not even a sexual thing. That's the weird thing about it. Is it sensual but not really sexual? Or do you think it's sexual, Drew?
Well, I mean, he wants to fuck himself. That was the only thing. See, I had thought about it when you said that, and I was like, that was pretty sexual.
But for me, that's all I thought about. It seems like a power thing. Like, it's all about, like, it's, I don't know. Like, I don't think it's a sex thing because like
a sex type thing.
No, it's not a sex type. It's not a Stone Temple Pilots song from their first album. Like I think it's not for me. It's not really a sex thing. Like, because they it's weird because at one point they say like, oh, they call him Buffalo Bill because he skins his humps. And I didn't get that at the time. Like, it took me years to get that because I actually did see the movie when I was like 9 or 10. So, Lone, I think my parents let me watch whatever.
He skins his humps.
I won the chance to see it in a local spelling bee. My mom made
what?
My mom made the terrible agreement with me that if I won, I could go see whatever I wanted. And
oh my God.
Then when that was done, I was like, I want to go see Silence of the Lambs. And she's like, okay.
She didn't amend that.
The way you phrased that, I thought that was like the award the school.
No, I
did too. I thought for a second, like, the school was like, if you win this, you get to see award-winning film, Silence of the Lambs.
You still didn't get any reward for winning. That was the thing. But that was what my parents offered. And my mom always tells the story of I wouldn't sit with her, of course, at that point. I was probably in eighth grade early ninth grade, because it was that February maybe. But she sits down and she says, like, three quarters of the way through the movie, some lone guy comes and sits down in the row behind her, directly behind her. And she's like,
what?
She said it was the scariest thing that had ever happened in a movie.
Like, one of the things that benefits this film too, like, it, I am jaded by how great everyone said it was at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So like, I, you know, like my mom let me watch it. For the record, guys, my mom let me watch it, but she let me watch pretty much anything. And I turned out just fine. Sort of. So like, but even my mom, she had seen it before I watched it, and she kind of told me like, hey, don't watch this scene, which is the I'd fuck the shit.
That one she didn't want you to watch, but she just didn't say anything about the semen toss.
Well, I didn't know what that was when I was 9. Like,
why is that man got cheated?
He said, I can smell your cunt. Yeah.
Is it,
oh, I myself cannot. The movie is just filled with so many lines. But like,
Dr. Lecter.
But even as I watched it, my mom was like, this movie is so scary, Tyler. Like, this is such a scary movie. Like, this is a really... But she like built up the movie as I watched it. And like, that carried through every watch. Like, every time I see the movie, like, I have the echo of that in the back of my mind. Like, man, this movie is fucking good. Like, it starts... Like, it has the thing that all great movies do where it starts at precisely at the right moment. Like, we don't have 30 minutes of building up Clarice Starling. Like, we don't get like, oh, she's young and she's a woman and she's fighting the system. It's like, she's out running, so we know she's, like, hard ass. And then they're like, all right, Jack Crawford needs to see you. And it's like, fuck it, we're in this movie. Like, we're in to see Lecter. Such a great... Like, the movie is so well-paced. Like, it never gets boring, even though it's a two-hour movie, which, you know, is something that we grouse about today.
No, if all movies moved like this and pulled this... I mean, what would we do if every movie was as good as this?
Right. There's no... The middle cannot hold, sir.
Also, and let's... One of the greatest, at the time, mind fucks for me was watching this film and the very end when they're about to bust in... is Buffalo Bill's house.
Fuck yeah.
And they're, you know, it's the scenes are shooting, cutting back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
She's at the right house. The FBI is not at the right house. It's such a great, I'd never seen anything like that before.
Me
like,
either.
What's going on? What's happening?
Some great parallel editing.
Yeah. Intentionally disorienting you, too, to make you, like, to throw you off the, of what is going on.
Yeah. Like,
the bells ring at the same time. And
yeah.
Then,
yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where, like, that is a real twist. When we talk about twists in movies, like, that is a perfectly well-designed twist.
Although, I can always, like, in that movie, I can tell instantly when Jodie Foster is getting nervous. You can hear it in her voice. The
great acting.
Like, this is her. This is, she was big, yes.
Was she a great big fat person?
Okay.
Yeah.
One of the greatest lines ever, and is all, whenever I'm, you know... Someone's like, Brian, how's your mom? Like, she's a big fat person.
I mean, it's one of the things. Okay, so the shootout at the end is an afterthought and a letdown compared to the scene where they have the standoff in the kitchen where, you know, it's your great big fat. And you know the gun's there, and she starts to realize, like, holy fuck, this is him. This is the dude. It's like you're saying, like, masterful acting, masterful editing, great pacing for that scene. It doesn't go on too long. It doesn't overemphasize itself. It's just an amazing, like, maybe the best scene in the movie for me. Like, that's a really good scene.
I mean, I like, as showy as it is, I love the hand reaching out in the night vision goggles.
Yeah.
And just when he's reaching out, that's my favorite part. Just when he reaches out and pull him back. He's reaching out and then pull him back.
Yeah, that is really tense. Like,
asexual.
What?
Or it's sensual.
It's sensual. He's sensual, but not sexual. I don't know. Like,
yeah, no, it's a scene that is like, it still makes me nervous when I watch it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like just how tense she. You can feel how tense she is. You can feel how just like at home he is. He's not worried about her because he thinks like I've got her dead to rights now. She can't find me. I'm right behind her. Although as an FBI agent, you know, you think someone could, you could sense someone behind you.
What do you mean? In the dark?
When it's pitch black darkness like that? I mean, you sense something's all around you, I'd imagine.
How do they teach you that in FBI?
Yeah. No, how is that an FBI skill, Brian?
Maybe it's not an FBI skill. Maybe it's just me.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you can tell. You can tell,
like, tell when somebody's behind him in the dark.
Listen, I don't want to pretend like I'm my kid here and say, like, if you put me in a room, dark room and someone walks up behind me, I can feel it.
No.
We need to test this theory for our YouTube channel.
All right.
I like to think that poor Ted Levine, though. Ted Levine, I've never been sure about that. Never escaped this role. No. I feel like the rest. Every time I see him, I hear the voice. I mean, like that awful voice. Sure, and the first time I really distinctly remember seeing him was Heat. After that,
yeah. Also, why wasn't he the killer in Joyride? He was the voice of the killer.
Right.
How come they didn't just make him the killer in Joyride?
Is Joyride a remake of The Duel?
No.
Similar, but no.
I don't think I've ever seen Joyride.
I was, Jack,
just fun, honestly.
I don't like car chasing people movies.
This is good. It's a very creepy, like, Ted Levine.
They're in the hotel scene.
Yeah, there's a hotel scene.
They are.
There's some great death scenes, too, from the,
Isn't it just like two people?
No, it's.
Well, it's three, at least, because there's Paul Walker and Scott Zahn.
Wait, who was the second person? Scott Zahn. Who's the second person?
Steve Zahn.
Steve Zahn, that's right.
And Lily Sobieski.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Lily Sobieski. That's weird.
Yes, Helen Hunt's.
Helen Hunt's miniature person.
It's a Joyride is a very good, like, horror movie. There was an episode of Bob's Burgers we were, Jackson and I were watching, where they had a similar thing, except they were actually being chased by a truck in a shape of a giant candy cane, and Bob kept messing with them, and I had to tell him the plot of Joyride. He's like, I want to watch that. And I was trying to think, it's like, is that? I mean, I know we've watched some horror films. That would probably be okay. Except
just show him Duel at that point.
It's fun to watch. I watched them all last year.
That's right. She did an article for the website.
It's totally safe for kids.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
No, the best part is that they didn't. The best part was that every one of them has a Roxette song in it.
Yes.
Awesome.
It's true.
But yeah, like I think Ted Levine. Sorry, go ahead, Lona.
No, I just said that's how the Joyrides are connected.
Come join the Joyride.
They're actually, it's all the second, third, and fourth one are all based on people finding the mixtape from the first one.
Everyone's 90s
mixtape. I don't get anything
tape.
That you're saying.
It's, and this is actually the same mixtape that movie we watched a couple of weeks ago with
Curve.
She Who Dances with Stars.
Julianne Hough.
Yes.
Curve.
Oh, it was on that mixtape, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well,
no, it really was. Roxette's Joyride was literally on there. Or was it?
It wasn't Joyride.
Must have been Love.
Must have been Love's Pretty Woman. It's another one.
I don't know. All right. Anyway.
No. Hang on. We're going to get this. Let's not look at the internet.
Shut the fuck up.
Roxette's other song besides Joyride and Must Have Been Love.
And The Look. It's not The Look either.
She's got the look. A fourth Roxette song?
dare not say. Yeah, Ted Levine, like, I mean, it's the kind of thing where it's like, well, you're an iconic role. It's like being Luke Skywalker. Like, you can be this person, but whenever you go to audition, it's like, do the voice. Do the
buffalo. Just say I'd fuck me.
I'd fuck me. Like, just, I know
lotion
this is a cartoon.
Basket, always is what you got to ask
lotion,
for.
Yeah. Put the lotion on the basket. Or else you get
rubs the lotion on his skin or else it gets the hose again.
Oh, pressure.
What'd you do to my dog? Okay, all right.
I love the anger of that scene, too. It's how are you getting angry at me?
You're not unwelcome, but it's completely off base with that. I mean, you did fucking kidnap me, you know? Also, maybe the best use of American Girl.
Oh, yeah. Like, that song was not on my radar at all. Like that movie, like that song put that on my radar. Like I guess I was 9. So, I mean, any song was not on my radar at that time, but really it has a whole other meaning now.
Totally also, there. If I'm ever going to help someone put move furniture in a car, I'm going to make sure when they go, you go in first. I'm like, No.
I always distinctly remember reading that was one they stole from Bundy.
Yeah, Ted Bundy did that.
That was one of his moves.
Yeah, I did not know that.
Ted Bundy did that. Or he would pretend to have a broken arm and drop his textbooks. Like, I think that's how he got one of the sorority sisters at, was it Florida State or University of Florida?
It was University of Florida.
Is that where they came up with this phrase, a textbook maneuver?
Yep, that's actually, even though it was out before then, that's they retrofitted it.
They adjusted it. Yeah, they're like, all right, well, Ted Bundy's really amped it up on that textbook thing.
Plus, we got it now. It's this. But yeah, like, I mean, from stem to stern, that movie Silence of the Lambs is a fantastic movie. Like, I just cannot give it enough plaudits.
And if you're listening to this podcast and you have not seen Silence of the Lambs, first of all, what the fuck?
Shame on you.
Right. Go see it. You know, buy a 35mm copy of it. Watch it. Buy a projector. Set it up. Pretend like it's the 90s in your house.
Get a Gear VR and pretend to watch it on a 60-inch TV.
Or buy all the Roxette albums.
Yeah. And then in your mind,
if you play them backwards, it's the plot line.
Yeah.
Hello, you fool. I love you. Learn to watch all the joyrides.
I don't think you should continue with the series, though, honestly.
No. After Joyride 1?
No, I mean, Silence of the Lambs.
Oh. Don't watch Silence of the Lambs 2.
There's no reason to watch Hannibal. There's no reason to watch Red Dragon. There's no reason to watch Hannibal Rising. Least of all.
Ladies, there's a reason to watch Red Dragon, but it has, you know, nothing to do with the movie being of any quality. But just...
Man. Yeah.
Manhunter, you watched, yes.
I don't know, man. I think Hannibal's fine.
By the way, the other Roxette song we're looking for is Listen to Your Heart.
Listen to Your Heart. Yeah.
I cheated.
Calling for you. I think the series, though, is worth going to.
Yeah.
The movie, the TV series.
Mm-hmm.
With Lawrence Fishburne doing the Freddie Faison role from the other Silence of the Lambs films.
No, he's doing the Jack Crawford role.
Mm. I totally missed that one when I was watching it then.
Well.
You did?
I don't know. I say watch the movies except Hannibal Rising. I think Hannibal's fine. I think as a purely popcorn cop movie, I think Red Dragon, the Brett Ratner movie, is fine. Like, I don't think it's good, but I think it's fine. It is what, Brian?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Cromulent.
But there's no reason to watch. Just watch Manhunter, and then you don't need to watch Red Dragon.
Yeah, if you watch Manhunter, I don't know. You know what's funny about Manhunter is when I watched it, I didn't watch it until college. I didn't know that Michael Mann directed. I was just like, look at this really old 80s movie. This, look at this dumb shit. Anyway.
With the guy who could play Bill Clinton in a made-for-TV movie.
And the hospital.
Oh, look at the guy from CSI.
The High Museum.
That's right.
Yeah.
I always think of Will Peterson, though, as Pat Garrett from
Young
Guns 2.
Yeah, me too. Ditto, sir. Ditto. Good game. So, yeah, What do we have any closing thoughts or words about Silence of the Lambs other than it's amazing?
I think it, there are a couple of camera shots I would have chose differently, but okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this.
Who am I?
When the remake gets done, Brian,
I will say that I had, when we went out couple weekends ago down to Atlanta, I had actual lamb brains, and all I could think about the whole time was the scene from
Hannibal,
and he's like, I want to try that. Oh, you have a very excellent taste. And I kept thinking that as I was eating it.
I had
to think about Cable Guy.
The Silence of the Lamb.
Silence.
Anybody who goes to medieval times hates.
I know. you
work there? Or
yeah, the people who work there hate it every time. Like, yes, I know. No, we're not doing the Cable Guys thing.
Do you think anybody makes that reference to him anymore?
They have to.
I don't think anyone does.
I would. I'd be like, oh, you don't have Force, but you do have Pepsi?
Like, 2 years ago for my birthday, I totally made that reference. Ooh. And I made like 37 Cable Guy references, including like the brah, which was my favorite part.
I'm not imagining you two as either of the core audiences going to medieval times most of the time.
I go
most weekends.
It's a Groupon thing. I go like twice a month.
Falconing.
Yeah, I actually have my own robe there now.
Go for the falconing, stay for the mutton.
I wish they would serve better like medieval style food there, like giant turkey legs and stuff, like not a rotisserie chicken. But I get, you know, for $100, what are you going to get?
Tomato soup and
yes.
What?
Very pot? Poor food. That is for certain. I don't know what you get at what else you get from that place, but terrible food is included.
Hey, guys, go see Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. Yeah, in theaters. It's crazy.
Yeah. 25 years old, actually, last month.
Same age as me.
Yeah, 25 years old, like Brian.
25
times
years
two.
Old.
When he first
double,
saw it.
Double yes. it. Flip the numbers.
I'm Brian.
I'm Tyler.
I'm Drew.
I'm Lona.
Thanks for listening.
We should agree with that person.